Good afternoon. Today is Tuesday, March the 4th. 63rd day of the year. Joining us this afternoon. Ooh, and a green tie. Bill McCauley.
He's got a little green in
it. Wow. Gotta like that one.
Kind of tealish, greenish.
That's something. Not a white tie, a white shirt tie.
It isn't?
No, there's too many colors you can pull with that one.
That's okay, cool. Well,
fashion updates presented by...
When you get dressed at 4:30 in the morning, or 4:15, you just put on whatever seems to be...
I didn't know Cynthia got up that early to dress you.
Yeah.
yeah, I gotcha, yeah. Didn't I?
Sometimes she gets up to let the dog out.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Yeah. Let the games begin.
Yeah. And I'm not the dog, just to be clear.
Yeah. Oh, boy. We got all kinds of stuff to talk about, obviously, kind of in that wrap-up panic, oh, my gosh, state. So we'll talk about some of the panic, oh, my gosh, stuff when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank, our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times 313. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Bill McCauley, but before we do, our quote this afternoon comes from Linda Ellerbe in 1991, quote, and this is talking about conformity.
Huh. Okay. Do you mean tax law conformity? California conforming to federal?
You made that bridge. Okay, good. Only dead fish swim with the stream.
I've seen you swim.
Yeah, no, that's more Bob. Yeah. Hmm. Not a lot of weave with Bob anymore either.
Yeah.
Bob and Beach, that's kind of the theory.
Yeah. Those are good.
So, all good accountants are now in survival mode, huh?
Yeah, we're... Full-blown scramble mode. But that's, you know, that's to be expected. And of course, you know, the government doesn't do us any favors. So, our season keeps getting squeezed.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Last year at this time, we were talking about the funny stuff at the end of 2012. Some of the patch stuff, last minute this, last minute that, not having any of the tax programming available until da-da-da-da. Mm-hmm. Okay. So this one didn't go through the same machinations. Does that mean it's a better one?
No, it doesn't. Unfortunately, it's the IRS was not really prepared to fully implement some key provisions that came about in the Affordable Care Act. One of those pieces was called the net investment income tax, and it's a surtax, 3.8% surtax. It's charged, or it could be 0.9, depending on a myriad of issues, but there's on incomes over $250,000 or $250,000, and there was some reporting. First of all, I don't think they were clear with necessarily up front with what they wanted in terms of 1099, so I think the brokerage houses and others got held up getting the format of their reporting done properly. As a matter of fact, the instructions for the Form 8960, just came out last week.
Say that again.
The instructions for the net investment income tax form came out last week. So
if anybody filed before then,
you were
it's wrong?
You either chose no, not necessarily. The software companies were making educated guesses about what they thought the form meant and what the instructions would say when they got them, I only did a handful of returns that. And I didn't hold any of them. I sent them all out because I was comfortable, based upon my knowledge of the law, and looking at the form, I thought that our tax software was going to generate it correctly. And as it turns out, we think it has. However, that form still in our tax software is probably we get late Wednesday updates, so probably Thursday morning. We're hopeful that form will be final. And then we can go back and double check and make sure that we don't have any issues with any of those returns. The problem you run into is that if you keep holding returns for impediments, that can end up creating a real workflow backlog at critical times. And so,
who you been talking to?
So, well, I'm,
you mean you won't see the sunshine for a couple extra weeks because your piles are so high?
Well, and so yeah. so you get the point that when the instructions, you know, weren't available till last week, it's very difficult. I mean, there are other forms. As an example, there's a form that charitable remainder trusts prepare and submit. That form is supposed to be available again this Thursday with our tax software, but it wasn't final again until last week. So, you know, charitable remainder trusts, you know, and the issue with those, they're most people don't have a charitable remainder trust. Look, we're talking about a small subset. However, if you do, you need information from that charitable remainder trust to prepare your individual income tax return. And if you can't get that information because that tax return can't be prepared, it's just one more, you know, stumbling
another challenge.
Block.
Yeah.
And so,
is it normal for these forms not to be formalized?
Nice.
You like that?
Yeah.
Okay.
We like the formalized forms as opposed to informalized forms.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I would think that the IRS would have had their act together by the end of the first week in January, because there's going to be a little bit of that. Possibly.
Look, when was the Affordable Care Act law passed?
Last year.
No. 2009?
Okay.
I think.
Last decade.
So I believe it was 2009. It's 2013. They should have had this stuff dialed in by now. But for some reason...
No, I could have said this year because things are being bumped and moved around.
Yes. But the Affordable Care Act...
The actual
What we refer to commonly as Obamacare was passed, I believe, in 2009. So, you know...
Is it that complicated? Or has it just not been a high priority because it's a couple years out? It's a year out. It's 6 months out and just didn't get around to it.
It's a great question why they didn't... Why things weren't ready in a better order. And it's above my pay grade to really know the answer to that. But, you know, from a purely, you know, from stepping back to 30,000 feet and looking down, you think there's no way that's what we should be faced with this year. But it just adds to the challenge that's associated with us trying to get our work done, because it makes it more difficult for the brokerage houses to get their stuff out, et cetera.
It's 3:19.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. If you've never been to Eureka's Sequoia Park Zoo, or haven't in a long time, you're in for a treat. Eureka is one of the smallest cities in the nation to have a zoo, and quite a zoo it is. It's among the redwood trees and specializes in a variety of small animals. Many exhibits have been updated, with more on the way. A big favorite is the red panda family. If you think of pandas as black and white, big, and chewing on bamboo, think again. Red pandas are small with reddish coats and white faces. Watch them scamper on their trees. The pink flamingo flock will dazzle you as you pass their pond. There are many more zoo pleasures awaiting young and old alike. There's a cafe and gift shop, too. On Wednesdays, all visitors come in at half price. For days and hours, see their website, sequoiaparkzoo.net. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:24. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Bill McCauley. So looking at some of the different challenges that are out there, in addition to this, the Obamacare and the IRS stuff is at the federal level.
Mm-hmm.
Does that ripple down into the states also, or is this something that's purely on the federal tax returns?
Well, most of that is going to be purely impacting federal returns, particularly it really doesn't have an impact on California. It is interesting in California this year that the California Form 540 is now 5 pages long. And so I don't think...
What?
It's 5 pages. And so...
They go to bigger font?
Well, there's a lot more white on the pages. And I'm not sure that anybody is concerned about saving trees. Now, granted, a number of returns are e-filed, but it seems to me, and don't get me wrong, I'm not I'm not anti-paper. You know, I'm not losing any sleep over, you know, over
cutting down a tree.
Cutting down trees because they grow back.
Yeah,
that's everybody's got a perspective. That's mine. And you know, I'm not saying we should cut every tree down. But the point is.
Did you hear what Macaulay said? Clear cut California.
Yeah, exactly. Clear cut California. It's like covered California. Yeah. Uncovered California. Great. So I shouldn't come in here during tax season.
Probably not.
I've completely lost my train of thought.
Five pages. 540.
So yeah, I mean you're looking at and not only that, for partnerships and trust returns that have information that goes to the beneficiaries, those go on a form called a K-1. Those are using another page. So, I mean, the apparently they're assuming a lot of this is going to get e-filed, or they don't care about using paper because the paper, you know, our paper usage, because we print a paper copy for most of our clients, is up.
Well, it's Postal Service appreciates it.
Well, yeah, I would think that would be the case.
So, looking at this, you know, I suppose that could be a thought, is that they're really trying hard to encourage e-filing. You make these things so big when they print out that you're going to have more people doing the e-filing. Is California still pushing that as hard in the feds? Yeah. I remember a couple of years ago, it wasn't mandated, but they were really making it... a push to make that happen.
At this point, you know, if you e-file a material, or if you file and sign, like in our case, an adequate number of returns, you're mandated to e-file. And the only situation where you can't is if the client doesn't want to, or if there's some issue with transmitting the return electronically that prohibits you basically from doing it. So, you know, for individuals and estates and trusts, we're required. To e-file those returns, and California last couple years you couldn't e-file an estate or trust, so you were paper filing the state and e-filing the federal, which was inefficient. Thankfully, for 2013, you can now e-file trust returns and estate and trust, what we call a fiduciary return. You can now e-file those returns. So
your systems then can...
It's a little more efficient for us. Instead of having to prepare returns for, you know, two processing methods, it's easier, which is good.
So what happens when an e-file is e-filed? Does it get received and automatically get processed and assigned, or is there somebody at the other end who's having to do some manual stuff to it? And then it gets sent off to whatever closet it ends up in, and then the random sampling happens for the audits.
So typically what occurs with an e-file return is there's, you know, we use tax software that's in effect our service bureau so we transmit the returns and through a secure pipe on the internet to our software company, and they in turn use a secure pipe on the internet to transmit the returns to the IRS or the Franchise Tax Board or the Oregon Department of Revenue or wherever we're filing the return. And at that point, the return is received by the software company gets a verification back that the return's been received. Then typically the next day or within several hours, the return will be accepted, and then the feds or the state will transmit an acceptance back to the software company. The next time we go in to log in, we get those acknowledgments that come down, and we know these are all accepted returns. And then we're required by law to send an acceptance letter or acknowledgment letter off to our clients and say, okay, your return was accepted on this date. This is the number the submission ID that's associated with the return.
You can't just do that on an email?
You could. The challenge is if you're doing an email, not all of our clients are email friendly. So if it becomes dual system during a period of time where you're at your peak busy, and so for us, we've just decided we're going to mail them, and so we, you know, the Postal Service gets a kick from us because we do mail them unless somebody we know they're coming in, then we'll hand it to them when they walk in the door. You know, because we have clients we do payroll regularly for and things like that, that they're coming in regularly to the building. And so, you know, we'll save the 46 cents if we can.
It might as well, man. Yeah. So it goes to wherever is at the end of the final pipeline.
Right.
Then what happens?
What happens is the tax return goes through a logic check at the recipient. And first logic check that they're doing is they're going to, you know, again, before you process the return.
Hold that thought. Logic is kind of a little something for me to, I'm going to have to wrap my head around that one. Logic, government, state. What doesn't belong? KINS, News and Information Times, 3:30.
Decade of Difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast. This is Jim Ritter with Humboldt Live in the Arcata High School Career and College Center. Do you have life and work experiences that could be of benefit to our local youth? We're recruiting community members to mentor and share ideas with our middle and high school students. Please call me at 839-5114 for more information. The Decade of Difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Bill McCauley. So, Bill, I kind of wrap my head around almost the concept of the state and the Fed and trust. almost there. So the tax returns go to some governmental jurisdiction.
Right.
They look at it. They kind of, I guess, probably proof it, filter for the most obvious thing like, no signature or something along those lines?
Basically what they're looking at when they get those returns, Brian, is that they're going to, first of all, they're going to do a Social Security number match. And if one of the Social Security numbers that's in the return doesn't match with the name, or if the Social Security number has already been claimed in another return, it's immediately going to fail the e-file. And so you'll get a notice back saying that the e-file did not go through, and it did not go through for the following reasons. Now, there could be a number of reasons why. Sometimes it's just a software problem. Matter of fact, I had one of those earlier this year. I only had one e-file so far this year that didn't make it through initially, and it just required a resubmission. They just fixed the glitch in the program, and it had kind of a unique issue in the return. And then they realized that there were some other returns like mine, and they all got, or not my, it wasn't my return, my client's return, and so they fixed it, and so it's been, and that happens. I mean, you know, they're, because, you know, you're talking about having software from the software company provide data in a format that the IRS can, or the Franchise Tax Board, or whoever your taxing authority is, can receive and understand.
So it could be just a formatting.
It could be.
And it is.
Sometimes,
somewhere.
Sometimes yeah. It's as much as the date was various instead of the actual date, and that can cause it. As an example,
so it's not big. Oh my gosh!
No, it doesn't have to be.
It can be little.
And then what happens is ultimately sometimes software company doesn't know the IRS isn't going to receive, as an example, a date in a various format. There's a lot of things that we transmit. The dates are various because, you know, it's a series of transactions. There wasn't one date during the year. But there are certain transactions when the IRS receives it, they want a specific date. Now, we've learned what those are, and we use 12/31/13. And, you know, so it's basically various. It just doesn't say various, and they accept it, and it's fine. So the IRS, as an example, is going to take that return, and the first thing they're going to do, and the Franchise Tax Board does the same thing, is has this number been claimed in another return that we received? Do we know who this number is? Based on that number and that name, are we good? Or there might be a problem that the name and the number don't agree. And that happens sometimes when you have a marriage and somebody hasn't changed their Social Security number or their name with their Social Security number or made some other change. Or there's a kid and maybe we think their name is dad's name, but it's really a different father's name or something like that, so that you can see there'd be the birth father's name or whatever. So my point is, when those kinds of things occur, they're generally pretty easy to fix. The one that's not easy to fix is somebody's already claimed this taxpayer. That tells you that you've got to take some other steps to deal with that problem. Yeah. So they also go through and they do some basic edit checks, logic checks, if you will, on the data, making sure that things, you know, that there's general agreement with, you know, that the data's come in the right form and that they can interpret it. That usually is not the problem with an e-filed return because our software does that before we send it, and they know. And then every once in a while there'll be some kind of a problem like the one I described where for some reason it's not going through right, and then, you know, the software company might have to change a setting that they've got so that data comes through and is able to be read on the IRS.
Now, do those tend to be on forms that are not the most common?
Yes.
So if you have something that's a little abnormal.
Right. Yeah, and that's where you tend to see that. But it can, you know, every once in a while you'll get one, you scratch your head and you can't ever figure out how to deal with it, or time is of the essence. You know, the challenge is sometimes you got a tax return, there's a refund on it, the taxpayer wants to get it filed, we can't get it through because there's some issue, and sometimes we'll just paper file it at that time. Now, a paper filed return is going to be the refund's going to be delayed. So it's a bit of a guessing game. Do we send the paper or do we hope that by next Thursday, you know, there's a fix for this?
And so that's the software company is the source of the fix, or the governmental entity is the source of the fix?
Generally, the software company's figuring out what they have to do to make what they're sending be fully discernible and interpreted by the IRS or the Franchise Tax Board.
I would think if it's coming out of your office and there's one, well, there's probably going to be another 20 to 2,000 throughout the country that are going to run into the same scenario.
And that's what happens. And generally, what will happen is if I get an e-file reject and I say, okay, I can't get this one through, and I got this issue, and I'm looking at the diagnostics that the software company's giving me back, and they say, well, try this. And you look at all those things and go, that's not going to change. That's not applicable to me. That's not going to change. I got a problem because none of these fixes are seem to make sense with the diagnostic I'm getting. And those are the ones that then the most the early adopters, you know, the bleeding edge people. They will call and start agitating. So usually I don't, because I figure there's somebody else out there already doing it, and I'll usually wait and give it a couple days, and sure enough, 4 or 5 days later, you find out, hey, there's been some rejects, and we realize there's this group, you know, and we get little alerts that come up every day, you know, telling us here's what's going on in terms of...
So you're not in a vacuum.
Not a total vacuum. Sometimes, you know, you wait and you just think, fortunately, we're busy enough, you don't sit around going, I wonder what's going to go on with that return. You put it aside and you put a note on your calendar to check on it on Friday and then follow up.
Onto the next guy.
Onto the other things.
Yeah. So as a person on the outside looking in, is any of this stuff applicable to anything that we need to have concern with, or should we start to have some concern because, let's say, we bring our stuff in early April and whether or not it's going to be filed now or be an extension, okay, will all that stuff be worked out by then, the middle of the month, by next week? I would think it's got to be coming together pretty quick.
As problems come up, they get dealt with. We're still, you know, we still got some forms that aren't available, and those are a problem because you're queuing up those returns. And one of them, as an example, is charitable remainder trusts I've been working on. I can't even see, I can input the return, but I go to look at it and it says this form's not ready. So I can't even see if my input's right because I don't even have a draft form. Because a lot of times what we'll get is we'll get the draft form and it'll have a watermark printed across it, do not use for filing or something.
But you still can work it.
You can work it. You can get the return done. And usually they do that when they think they know what that form's going to look like, and they think they know what the instructions are. When they're a blank slate about it, they'll just give you this piece of paper that's useless, you know, on your screen that you look at and go.
Wouldn't it be funny if they put it, your guess is as good as ours.
Yeah, we try not to do that too much guesswork, but
from the provider, I mean, if they don't have it yet, call your congressman.
Yeah. Yeah, so those, and you know, those things are going to happen every year. There's going to be little challenges because it's a complicated thing, and you're talking about millions of tax returns that go through this system and multiple software providers who interface with these, with all these entities to get this done. And you know, it's easy to criticize them, but believe me, you know.
You haven't criticized yet.
Yeah, well, I've whined in behind closed doors.
Okay, well, we'll make sure we can purge that out of your system before it goes on air. KINS, News and Information Time, 344. We'll be back with more from Bill McCauley.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m., Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass, 7 p.m. Spanish Mass, and on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:48.
Wow.
2 minutes left with Mr. McCauley. Any trends? Are you seeing anything that's kind of getting your attention right now?
Well, I think that we're seeing – I don't think that things are appreciably different than last year in terms of, you know, income streams. I mean, I'm not seeing – there are clients with – 2012 was a pretty good dividend year. 2013 was a pretty good dividend year, so people's dividend income is relatively strong. Given the fact that interest rates are so poor, people have, you know, moved a little bit away from fixed income and moved into – although there are people who moved fixed income into tax freeze, and that's had some because that market has held up a little bit. Now, what's going to be the challenge with the tax free bond is if you buy it now and then in a few years when interest rates tick up, then the bond's not going to be worth what you paid for it. And then it's fine if you're holding to maturity, but if you're concerned about market value fluctuation, that's an issue. And so we are seeing a little bit of that. I think there's a little more capital gain activity. I mean, the stock market was good in 2013, so we're seeing some more short-term capital gains than we've been seeing the last few years. And the long-term gain picture is probably relatively similar. I mean, although I did see some clients takes – we had more clients taking gains a year ago because the tax rates are up in 2013 relative to 2012 with regard to capital gains. So we had a lot of clients who were taking gains in 2012 with the idea of trying to capture that low 15% rate. Now it's a maximum 20% rate on capital gains plus the net investment income tax.
Fun. Keep alive, man. Thanks. We'll see you sometime in the future.
Yeah.
Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.